You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Wisconsin's new poet laureate was recently announced. We'll hear how she hopes to reach the state's elderly and memory-impaired population through poetry.
First, almost 70 years ago, George Orwell published one of his signature works of fiction, the novel 1984. The story looked at a society where facts were distorted and ideas were suppressed.
Now, in 2017, the book seems to be making a comeback, and it might be in part because of this remark from top Donald Trump aide Kellyanne Conway. She was on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd talking about disproved claims by White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. Here's a listen.
Why did he do that? It undermines the credibility of the entire White House press office
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Wait a minute. Alternative facts, four of the five facts he uttered.
Hey, Chuck,
was Zeke Miller. Four of the five facts he uttered were just not true. Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
The book 1984 made its way to the top of the Amazon bestseller list not long after Conway's comments about alternative facts over a week ago. The company that publishes the book also said sales have risen about 10,000% since the inauguration.
Jerry Canavan joins us now. He's an assistant professor of English focusing on science fiction and fantasy fiction at Marquette University. Jerry, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Jerry, why do you think that the novel 1984 has become so popular?
Well, the sorts of issues you're talking about with regard to alternate facts and some of the spin doctoring that's been happening in politics certainly seems to be a huge part of it, as well as a general kind of bipartisan distrust of the government, depending on who's in power, right? Going back at least as far as the Bush years, every 8 years or so, we switch parties and we decide that the government has been taken over by monsters, and we just kind of go back and forth. So now Democrats have found themselves out of power and are petrified of the government's powers.
So you're saying this is a bipartisan thing, and every 4 to 8 years, 1984 gets a little boost?
Well, I think you've seen the same kinds of problems when Obama took office, right, where Obama was being compared to Nazis and other sorts of things. I don't think you saw the same kind of increase in 1984 sales 8 years ago. That seems to be very particular about this moment and particular to the way Trump and his people kind of present themselves rhetorically.
Now, for those of us who haven't read the book, can you give us a Cliff Notes version? What happens in it?
Oh, I'll do my best. So it takes place a little bit in the future from the moment it was written, in a post-atomic war landscape where the world has been taken over essentially by three supernations. And it focuses on a man named Winston Smith who works for the Ministry of Truth, whose job it is to redact historical records to fit with whatever the regime is now saying is true. And so his job essentially is to rewrite history to fit whatever the government, which is led by a figure named Big Brother, who may not actually exist, says at the time.
And Big Brother, that's one of the terms mm-hmm. that has gone on to have a life of its own after the book. There are other terms, it sounds like, mm-hmm. that come from this book that seem to have cultural relevance from time mm-hmm. to time over the years. What are some of those?
Well, one of the major things that happens in the book is that the government develops this new language, which it calls Newspeak, in order to basically prevent people from having the capacity to imagine freedom or democracy. And so it tries to narrow down what it's capable to think and say. And so sometimes you see people mocking authoritarian governments or government press releases with stuff like double plus ungood, which is a Newspeak phrase. Double think, right? The idea of holding two contradictory ideas in your mind at once when the regime requires you to, things like this. So Newspeak is a major part of what makes 1984 such a compelling book.
Can you give us a little background on where George Orwell got his inspiration for this book, what mm-hmm. he was thinking about at the time?
Well, I mean, he was thinking a little bit about what he thought the future of the world might look like, right? So 1984 is 1948 reversed, right? The year he was writing the book, and he's thinking a lot about what might happen. So he's thinking about the USSR, but he's also thinking about trends he sees in the Western democracies as well. And of course, he's very influenced by the rise of fascism in Germany. So he's kind of imagining, well, what could happen if these trends continue? And in part, he's thinking a lot about mass media, right? So one of the major innovations in the book is the telescreen, which is a television, but it also has a camera that can kind of look out at you. And so imagining that kind of total surveillance society that suddenly seems possible in the 20th century.
We're talking right now with Jerry Canavan, assistant professor of English, focusing on science fiction and fantasy at Marquette University. And he's with us right now to talk about the sudden interest in George Orwell's book, 1984. And how do you think, Jerry, people might see this book when one of the top news stories in the past several months has been the proliferation of fake news, and everyone seems to have their own definition of exactly what fake news is?
1984 is this powerful statement about the importance of truth and memory, and what happens when you kind of lose a sense of that kind of shared consensus reality, right, which is what's happened to America to a large extent over the last 15, 16 years or so. We've really split into at least two nations, everybody getting their own facts. And in the last campaign, of course, we saw this proliferation of stories that you never know if anything's true when you read it on the internet. And so that kind of feeling of loss and disorientation, I think, has drawn people back to that book. What happens to a country that can't know what's true anymore?
Really struck by your phrase, shared consensus reality. Do you really think that we ever had that? I mean, I know the internet gives everyone their own little niche to hide out in and get information, but did we ever really have shared consensus reality?
I mean, to an extent, I think one of the things you've seen over the 20th century, right, is the expansion of participation in government to a much wider section of people, right? So when pretty much white men were running everything, they had a consensus reality that just left out everybody else, right? So that wasn't so great either, for sure. But our institutions haven't really caught up to a world where people fundamentally disagree on basic facts, right? So even now, questions about global warming, right, whether or not it's true or it's a hoax, questions about the reality of polling, whether polling is accurate, right? All of these stories have transformed themselves into the point where it's hard sometimes to talk to somebody who watches the other news channel or reads the other websites. You get a totally different sense of what's happening in the world.
Do you think that the people who are reading 1984 right now, are they looking at it as a manual for how to turn things around? Or is this just sort of bleak reading and they're going to read in it maybe what they want to read?
It's a terrible manual for how to turn things around. One of the nightmarish things about 1984 is that the opposition movement is also part of the government. It's just a different agency within the government. And so as Winston Smith kind of gets drawn into the resistance, he's basically being made a fool because the government is also running that. And so the end of the book doesn't offer you any kind of hope about overthrowing the regime really much at all. So as a kind of strategy for resistance, it's actually kind of heartbreaking and terrible. So I think it's more about kind of inhabiting your unhappiness about the Trump election and kind of wallowing a little bit in that feeling of helplessness now that everything went a different way than a lot of people were expecting in November.
Do you think it's been read different ways over the years, sort of a cipher for whatever times that we're in?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's because it's so pliable and because there's such a disconnect between the moment of it's being written and the moment in which the events take place, it can kind of constantly come back. And so there are elements of it that now seem to really speak to like the Twitter age, right? This kind of sense of constant surveillance, of constantly having to perform the proper emotions for everybody at all times, having no privacy, having nowhere you can go where you're not reachable by your employer or by the police or by somebody else, right? A world that's really kind of constrained. And I think we feel that way a lot now with cell phones and Twitter and social media. We kind of have this sense of the world watching us at all times. I think that slogan, Big Brother is watching you, feels truer now than maybe it did when I was younger.
Do you think there's still new things to find in it as people read it now, a different point in history? It's not 1948, it's 2017. Is there still something new there?
I mean, to an extent, it is a kind of timeless story about the worst thing that can happen to a government. To another extent, it does feel, I think, a little bit stale, as sometimes dystopias do. It feels like a picture of what you can avoid. And if you're not doing that, then everything's fine. And so sometimes it seems to me that the best dystopias are the ones that are a little more cartoonish, like Terry Gilliam's Brazil or something like that, right? That feels more harrowing to me personally than 1984 does, because what we're facing is not exactly the nightmarish villainy of 1984. It's this other kind of very strange thing that seems to be happening in the government right now.
Leave it there. Jerry, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Jerry Canavan. He's an assistant professor of English focusing on science fiction and fantasy fiction at Marquette University. And he was with us to talk about the new interest in George Orwell's book, 1984.